There should be a law that every podcast has to start with this song.
I'm going to be honest. I thought that you were going to play the song for 3 minutes and we couldn't talk. And I was like, I guess I'm just going to be fucking...
No, you could talk if you want. We don't play the whole song.
Oh, okay. That'd be a great just test for the guests just to see.
We just get started with a little fun.
Yeah, I like it.
And only the podcast listeners get this. YouTube doesn't.
Okay. Oh, because you get...
You get fined.
Demonetized.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. Well, they don't fine you. They just take it down.
Right.
Eventually, yeah. I'm pretty sure we'll get fined.
They're good at it. I remember I put an episode up with like 10 seconds of the song.
Dude.
They're like, we got it. Nope.
Dude.
Facebook will mute that part.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
We do, I'll tell you in a second.
Okay. Everyone's like, shut the fuck up. Let me hear the song.
You guys are ruining Journey for me right now. Nice shoes, bro.
Oh, dude, thanks. I mean, I had an audition. Oh, it doesn't matter. Who cares?
Welcome to the Homeschool Podcast, everybody. I'm Augustino Zoida. I'm the host of the Homeschool Podcast, and I'm here with my guest, Daniel Weingarten.
Hey.
And my co-host, Kevin Lyons, is not with us today because he's doing something. To be honest with you, I have no idea why the fuck he couldn't come today. He was real secretive about it. I don't know. He might have been getting his dick wet. Who the fuck knows?
I think he just found out I'm the guest. He's like, nah, I'm good.
He didn't even ask who the guest was. He's like, bro, really? Can you podcast Wednesday? And he was like... No. And I'm like, oh, how come? He's just like, I got something to do. Like,
he got a date.
Maybe. I think so. I think it's possible.
He just doesn't want to tell you about it until it's all done.
I think it's very possible. Yeah. And you know what? He edits these, so he's going to hear this. I know.
Hey, man. I hope it went really well for you, whatever it is. I hope it's not something sad now.
Oh, I know, right?
Because if it is, then I hope.
He's like editing and crying at the same time. It's a little tear. What was I going to tell you that I was going to tell you when the music stopped?
You were going to tell me about, I don't know, man, these chairs are really comfortable. I'm feeling, normally podcast like setups are feel like, where do I put my body? Do I cross my leg? This feels like I can actually just hang out.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. It's a nice little lounge area.
Yeah.
Sometimes my dad comes over here and he just like, cause he's a cigar guy and he uses it as like a little smoking lounge.
Yeah. Dude, I remember the first time I met your dad, I was like, this is like a dude.
Yeah.
He's like a biker looking dude.
You think he looks like a biker? It's just the mustache.
It's the mustache. But he's also like a portly man.
Yeah.
Just
choking back those cigars, bro.
Really?
Dude, one day him and Steve Simone both came over here. Steve Simone's like kind of a cigar guy too now.
Oh, is he? I remember he used to dip.
Yeah.
Back at the haha. He would always talk about like how he's trying to quit dipping.
I still remind him about that and he'll go like, oh, that's so disgusting. I can't believe I did that. So disgusting.
I love Steve Simone.
He's the best, dude. I think I was gonna tell you something about like, oh yeah, YouTube. So we do an episode on here once a month, a segment called Laughter Piece Theater. Okay. And it's where we'll play some stand up tracks that are favorites of ours and then like, but we don't play like like a short clip, and then we'll talk about it. Like we'll sit like, why do we like it, or what I think about the writing style. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's actually really, really fun. It's really cool.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
And so now that I'm starting to put these like on Instagram IGTV, like I'll take a clip of my favorite part of the episode and throw it on IGTV. I did one with me analyzing a Louis C.K. bit. And like the first few seconds, you actually hear the bit. It's a 5 minute story, but I edited it down to like 5 seconds of Louis C.K. So you can still hear what it's about, and then hear me talk about it.
Right.
And they took it down off IGTV in seconds, bro.
Oh wow.
They're like, you don't own this fucking content.
Dude, the copyright stuff is real.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you think you're gonna get away with anything these days, because now there's like AI, and the
but
AI
you know what's
is grabbing everything, man.
The track that I was playing like was from a YouTube video I found, and Louis C.K. don't own that either. You know what I mean? Like,
I feel like there
some
was
dude threw that up.
I feel like they. If you put it up like 6 years ago or 7 years
it's just
ago,
yours now.
It's not yours, but they were like, all right, we're just gonna start focusing on the stuff that's getting posted now.
So crazy.
Maybe,
man.
I don't know. What the fuck do
the
I
fuck
know?
Do we know, dude?
What do we know? None of it makes sense.
All right, you guys, we're going to get into this episode, but first, this episode is brought to you by Masterclass. Masterclass, listen, you guys, it's fucking awesome, okay? You can take a class for just about anything in the comfort of your own home and on your own budget and on your own schedule, okay? That's the best thing about it is because you want to take a class in something to brush up on your craft, or just you've always maybe thought about acting or comedy and you're like, I should take a class, but you just don't have time. It's hard when you got a full-time job. Maybe you got kids and, like, you know, who's got time to take a class, let alone go out there and get on stage or whatever it is that you're into. And that's why I love Masterclass, because you set your own schedule every week, you know, like from this time to this time, I'm going to sit down and watch the sessions. And I love it for that. And I love that you can take a class on just about anything, and they keep adding new topics and classes on there all the time. I just got a notification today that they're adding, a new filmmaking, like how to do filmmaking and stuff like that. Martin Scorsese has a few classes on there. Steve Martin has the comedy class. There's a bunch.
They look good. Whenever I see an ad, I'm like, that seems legit.
I've done a few. Comedy one, acting, and Usher.
Usher. Oh, as in the musician.
No. He teaches a performing arts class. It has nothing to do with music.
Right, but when you said Usher, I thought it was a master class on how to be like a professional usher, like at a movie theater.
Yeah, like a church usher.
Like, this is how you pass the collection plate.
No, dude, but it's just I just thought that would be a good class to take for as a performing artist, just to pick up some. Listen, like some stuff you're going to take from it, some stuff you may already know, some of it's really basics, and then there's like advanced class. Like, for example, like Gordon Ramsay even has a cooking class, and then he has like a part two and a part three, like more advanced and stuff. And listen, normally it's $90 per class. Like, you know, hey, I want to take the comedy one, that's $90, and I also want to take the acting one, that's another $90. But right now, you can click the link in the description and sign up for the entire year, and you'll have full access to the website. So it's $180 for full access to the entire website for a year. So if you're going to take two classes anyway, it's a no-brainer to pay the $180, and you can take all of them, mix it up, do acting. There's a writing class. There's even screenplay writing, comedy, music. It's all on there. There's like how to be a better poker player. I mean, it's fucking insane. And they keep adding more.
And they pay out checks to these people.
Oh, yeah,
because they have to.
Yeah, dude.
How else are you getting all these people to give up however much time?
I'm waiting for the how to be a podcaster.
What's that going to be?
That would be great. Like, first of all, you got to get Rogan to do it.
Yeah.
Like, with their budget and, like, the level of people that they get, you got to go for, like, Rogan.
Well, but think about how much money they would have to pay him to do it.
Yeah.
Because the dude makes all of the money.
Yeah.
So it's like, he's not going to do anything unless he really wants to. I think
he's probably the one that made podcasting the biggest.
Yeah. I'm not, like, super well educated on podcast history, because I feel like podcasts go further back than most people realize.
Right, they've been around for a lot.
They've been around for a lot longer, and people were listening to them for a lot longer than people realize. Now it's much more mainstream, but
there's guys that are like the guys that put it on the map. I'd say are like Adam Carolla,
right. Yeah,
and then like Marin, fucking, you know, is another one. But I think Rogan is probably like for Masterclass's level of guys. They, I mean, dude, they have Ron Howard teaching a fucking class. Like, they go after the top guys.
They got Hans Zimmer doing the composer stuff.
Yeah, dude.
Isn't Daniel Negreanu's the poker player?
I don't know who it is.
Yeah,
but
I think it's
Negreanu. So much on there. There's a couple different ones, to be honest with you. But anyway,
it's good.
If you guys haven't yet, you've been putting it off, don't wait any longer. Also, you know, if you got a roommate or a friend or something that wants to, you know, study a different topic, you got, I would just go halvesies on them and share the password, you know, for the whole year access. Also,
are you allowed to say that?
Yeah, why the fuck not?
Sponsored post?
Yeah, why the fuck not, dude? I mean, be smart with it, you know what I mean? And I just lost my train of thought of what else I was gonna fucking say about it. But also, I think it would be a great holiday gift. The holidays are around the corner. It's like, dude, I got you a whole year access to Masterclass because I know you're into the performing arts, and you know,
it is a good gift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, so check that out. Also, don't forget to go to homeschooledpod.com for your one-stop shop, everything Homeschooled Podcast, including t-shirts, tour dates, and you can even contact us. Those emails go right to me, hit contact, fill out a little message, and I do answer them. So I appreciate you guys reaching out. And that's pretty much it, you guys. What do you say we fucking get this episode started?
Let's do it.
Like I said, Kevin Lyons ain't here, but he's here in spirit and because he's editing this shit later. And my guest is Daniel Weingarten. I'm Augustino Zoida. This is Homeschooled Podcast.
Please take your seats. School is now in session.
Homeschooled Podcast.
Homeschool.
The Homeschooled Podcast. Why? Because he was homeschooled.
I don't want to do that.
Okay.
I don't want to do that at all. I always hit it twice on accident.
Right, that was great.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thanks. I had somebody write the music.
The music, you got it's all Joey custom, in there.
Bro. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, man. at the end, it's so fucking stupid. It's just like when we were recording the like sound bites for it, like Kevin was trying to get me to say something. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I don't want to say that. And then we like laughed about it, and he ended up putting that in. Instead,
works perfectly,
which is fine.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on, man.
Oh, dude, thanks for having me.
It's always great to see you. I don't get to see you that often.
And I think what happened was we saw each other too much for like
for
a really long time, and then it was like, all right, we're gonna even it out on the back end.
Yeah.
That's
what I'm doing with like pizza.
I mentioned
I did like way too much pizza in the front end of my life.
Right. So now you're just making up for it.
So now it's like none.
I mean, yeah, back then you were a big boy. You were a big boy.
Yeah.
Dude, I met you 9 years ago.
Has it been 9 years?
It's because I was 18.
Yeah.
I'm 27. So it's been 9 years. It was like summer, right? It was around like summertime.
Mm-hmm. Because you were away at school.
I was at school and then I came back after my freshman year.
Did you go to college in Atlanta?
Yeah.
That's right. So you were in college in Atlanta, so it must have been summer because that was the only time that you were home.
Yeah, and then I was like, oh, I want to start doing comedy. So I went to the Ha Ha, started doing open mics, and that's where I met you.
Yeah. You know a little secret is that like you would come back every summer because you live here,
yeah.
But you went to school away. And a little secret is that when you finally graduated, it hit me one day. I never told you this before. It hit me one day. I went like, oh, he's not going to go away anymore. And I got a little happy, to be honest with you. I remember going like, oh, that's pretty fucking awesome. Like I got a little annoyed with you leaving all the time. Probably because you worked a lot for me.
For free, yeah. And I was like the only other comic that you could trust to like do the things that you also had to do.
Yeah.
Like work the door.
There's some people, you know, they always say you got to be a good delegator, I do try to work on that.
I'm so bad. I've gotten better. I've worked on it.
But there's some things you can't delegate to people because you're like, it's gonna take longer for me to make sure you do it right. Than me just doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you have the experience, and then some things are just like skill.
Yeah.
Like.
Some people just get shit. Like, also, I could always give you stuff, and I would know, like, okay, he gets it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. That was the best, dude. I just remember I would get there at 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was right around when I was like, because I was always like a good kid. And then I started doing comedy, and I was like, comedians smoke cigarettes. And there's a smoke shop next door.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then I would always get like, 5 Newport loose, like single, like just like in the, they would sell them.
Oh,
loose,
that's right. They would
like
sell Lucy's, the single ones. Yeah.
And then I would just like drink Diet Coke and smoke menthols and do open mics.
Yeah.
And then work the door. That was every day for like summers.
Yeah.
For
dude.
Like 3 years.
I remember that. And here's how much of a fat ass I was. That smoke shop right next door was like just as unhealthy for me, but I would just go get snacks.
How about the clothing candy store? Remember my pink pants?
Vaguely.
You remember I think I ripped my pants or something.
Yes.
And then I was like, I need to get a pair of pants. And then there was a vintage clothing store 2 doors down.
Right.
And I thought there were these like salmon colored pants.
Yeah.
That I was like, these are cool.
Yeah.
And then I put them on and they were skinny salmon pants and you guys ripped me to shreds.
Yeah. I remember that.
Ripped me to shreds.
You know what's funny is like right now those pants are totally in style.
They were in style then, not for you guys. They were, but also not me wearing them. I didn't have the, like, it's all about who's wearing the clothing.
Yeah.
Because, like,
right now, I would wear pants like that.
I have a hat that I got, and I don't think it, like, looks great on me, but I've just decided it looks good on me.
Okay.
And I'm just like, and I feel like it looks good on me, because I just decided.
A lot of it was that we would just make fun of you, because you got to make fun of the younger guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you... When comedy works like that, like it doesn't matter, like if like a 50-year-old decides I want to start stand up, you know, and he comes over doing open mics, and we're all like where we are now, we get to call him the kid. You know what I mean? Like that's how stand up comedy works. You're the rookie, so like we're gonna make fun of you. We're gonna put you through the ringer. There's no regard for age.
I never
had
brothers growing up or friends, so
I never had brothers.
No,
either.
But I never had brothers growing up, so. You guys were like my older brothers that like picked on me. That was the first time I like, but like picked on with love.
Yeah.
Because I got bullied.
You like look forward to getting picked on?
Well, I think there was a part of me that enjoyed, like every time Jack would punch me in the arm, I'd be like, ah, that bruise is staying there.
Yeah.
That bruise is a reminder of like love, you know?
Yeah. That hurts so good.
It hurts so good. So I became a masochist.
Yeah. You know what's funny? That vintage clothing store is there still.
Oh, is it still?
But no. It was, remember the guy bought it and used to have those old sewing machines in the window? Like those antique old sewing machines?
Vaguely.
So he didn't only have clothes, he had like everything vintage. Mm-hmm. And he he was an older guy, and he operated like online. He would sell shit online, and then he would still have his store. Even one of my buddies from Boston, not Rico, but another guy, would come visit me, and he went in there one day and found this like fucking Italian like brown leather jacket that was so pimp. Uh-huh. And he got it for like $50. It was worth like $300. But that guy sold it, and now it's a full blown like vintage store, clothing only. It's called there's a few of them. It's called like Iguana, something like that.
Oh, something
Iguana.
I don't know.
But anyway, they're there, but it's like they've remodeled it.
Yeah. Every time I drive by there and I see the old Haha, I get a little sad.
Yeah, it's just
because it's just boarded up.
It's just boarded up.
And now it's been enough time where it's like, is anything ever gonna be there?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah,
it's a little weird because like North Hollywood's continued to come up.
Yeah.
And there's continued to be like new
businesses. They're building apartments, everything.
So it's weird that piece of property, maybe whoever owns it is just trying to get too much money for it. I don't know.
Well, you know, I get my haircut still from the guy next door. That guy's been doing my hair for like 10 years.
I've gotten a haircut there before.
Yeah. So I always talk to him. I'm like, what's going on next door, bro? And he goes like, so here's the rumor is that he bought the place in hopes of like remodeling it and opening a restaurant there. And what ended up happening was that there were so many like code violations of like, if you're going to do it, you're going to have to take out all the plumbing. Like you're going to, yeah, it apparently is like a huge job where it's probably out of his budget to fucking do anything with it. So it's just sitting there.
He didn't check it before he bought it?
I don't think so, dude.
That sucks.
I think that I don't know. I don't know the story.
I'm getting anxiety.
Right?
Just thinking about that.
But you know who's happy? Fucking Jack Sr.
Oh, buddy. He took the Blue Lagoon, whatever that place used to be called.
The Blue Moon.
The Blue Moon.
Yeah.
The Blue Moon. Remember when we went to court and
we
had to do like statements?
Were you there too?
I was there, yeah.
Did you do a statement?
I did do a statement.
Yeah, I don't think Jack, I said
Jack
anything.
Wrangled, Jack barked. Jack was wrangling a bringer show to City Hall.
Yes.
To perform.
Dude, Sean Kerrigan was there.
Yeah.
Frazier Smith showed everyone. Up.
But like, here's the thing. Of course we're going to go. Because no one else would give a no one else was as look. Has Terry made me cry? Yes, when I was yes, she made me cry before, but she knows that. But like
Jack Senior's made me cry before too.
Jack Senior made me
never lets it go either.
He's no.
Remember that time that you cried?
Oh, the crying. But like it's always I always say like I know no matter what at the end of the day like all of it was like love and belief. In like when there were comics that they loved and believed in, they loved and believed in them.
Yeah,
you know, and like you can pick apart, be like, oh, well, you know, Terry made me cry that one time. Probably deserved whatever she.
It's also kind of how they raised their kids too,
right? But it's like
which like their kids would get upset sometimes, but it's just like, hey, we're all fucking going through it.
But it's tough love.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So it's like at the end of the day, I'm so when it came to like that City Hall thing, it's like the people that showed up there, it's because we were grateful for what that club gave us.
Yeah,
and for what they gave us.
Dude, I haven't thought about that in a long time, that we had to go down to the courthouse.
They fought for that place, man.
And we had to like all like protest to let them move the Haha at the new location.
Yeah. I also remember Jack like remodeling that place.
Yeah.
And like how much passion he put into that. Because that place was not that nice.
Dude, it was shitty.
It was a shithole. And like he did a really good job at renovating it.
I remember we were like ripping it apart and stuff in the beginning, and we would just find needles, like heroin needles and shit, because that used to be a nightclub.
You know? Well, that got shut down because of a bunch of violations.
Well, dude, they were under investigation so many times, and cops went out there so many times that eventually just got shut down. Dude, so many illegal drugs and shit happened. They did. It was an after hours club. They like illegally close their doors, lock them at 2 a.m., but keep business going inside and just do all cash. And then they would not allow you to leave.
I've been to places like that.
Yeah,
those
dude,
are creepy.
I've been there for it before. Oh, it was the Haha. Yeah.
No after hours is ever good.
Mm-hmm.
I've never left a club. And they're like, yo, we're going to this after hours thing. And then I go, and I'm happy that I went. Not one time.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I... Never.
Yeah.
Never. What? It's always the worst people are there. The worst people in Hollywood. Every nightmare story happens at those after hours.
Yeah. I've been there with Rico before during... I've been there on like two or three different occasions during after hours. And I've been there before where it was like a grip of Armenian dudes that were ready to beat the fuck out of Rico because they were convinced he was an undercover cop and they were ready to murder him and not let him leave there.
In all fairness, Rico does look like an undercover cop.
he parties like he's
got
fucking...
he's got like Serpico vibes, you know. And Serpico, he was an undercover cop, right? Is that reference?
Yeah,
that
Serpico,
reference is
yeah.
accurate. Yeah,
yeah.
Dude, you ever make a movie, do you ever make movie references but then you second guess it? It's like when you use a word and you're like, I don't know, the word sounds like it's I'm using it correctly, but I don't think the definition makes sense, but you just keep going and you just, that's what that was.
Bro, like fucking Buscemi and like, dude, what are you talking about?
Buddy, I was a lackadaisical as I was running through the streets. I don't know. Bad riff.
What was I just going to tell you? Fuck. I don't know. My memory's been like bad the last 2 days. I was doing good for a while because I stopped smoking weed.
Have you not been sleeping?
I've been
tired because I've been working and like.
I did go to bed at like 2 a.m. last night. I woke up at 8.
I have this thing now where I like, especially like if I'm having a conversation while I'm driving, I'll be talking and then it'll just go.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm focused on the road or like where I'm going.
So I've been doing a lot better because I stopped smoking weed and all of a sudden it was fucking with my writing. It was fucking with my like memory on stage.
Oh, you were smoking like during the day and all that stuff.
I was never a smoker.
No.
And when I started a podcast, I became a smoker because everybody brings over weed and then the guests like to have weed. So I would always have weed
for the
guests.
That sounds like my nightmare to be. My nightmare is any video where anybody goes on Joey's podcast and fucking gets wrecked. And I go, that looks like my nightmare.
Yeah, luckily I've never been that far. But I just stopped because like I would be on stage and like literally blank on the joke.
Yeah, that's not good.
Oh, here's what I was going to tell you is that I currently have a joke right now that's fucking great, dude. Uh-huh. It's fucking great. And it's a great joke that leads into a great story. And the story is something that happened to me at the Blue Moon, which I just realized that's where I was because I've been doing the story for a couple of weeks now on stage. Uh-huh. And it just hit me right now. Oh, shit, that's where I was.
Yeah.
Was that nightclub, which is now the Haha. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, like,
oh, that's funny.
The next time I perform at the Haha, I'm going to do it. And I just realized, like, am I going to tell him it was here?
Yeah.
Because a part of the story is me telling him it's about, like, this girl that I met there. You know, mm-hmm. This is, like, in between wives.
In between. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That little
gap where I didn't have a wife. and I met a girl there at the After Hours Club. And so it's about that. And a part of the story is literally telling them about, you know, when we had the little booth in the back where you can close the curtain. Mm-hmm. So at the new Haha, those are still there. Those arches in the back of the room, the VIP couches up there, those were curtains. And that was like you can
so
buy
like that
those.
Higher level. So like if this is the stage,
yeah,
this higher level right here was like the VIP.
Well, you know where the comics hang out right now at the Haha.
Oh, you're saying
in the back of the showroom.
Oh yes, okay. Sorry, I thought you meant to like to the side. Like if this is the stage,
you know the arch, right?
Yes, yeah.
That right there, where the like orange couches,
in the corner,
yeah,
right by the entry.
Those were all the whole wall was. That's why there's mirrors there. Right now when you're on stage at the Haha, you can look straight ahead and see yourself.
Yeah,
there's
a
mirror in the back of the room. Those are mirrors originally from the nightclub because that was a fucking VIP booth and chicks would fucking rub up on you in there. Uh-huh. And that one right now where the comics all sit is the fucking VIP booth that I was in.
Is that the same? Did they reupholster those couches? Or is there still chlamydia from 07?
When we first moved in there, when the Haha moved in there, it was the original couches. But now he's got like all new ones back there.
Okay. Yeah. They look pretty new.
Yeah. You get up on stage much lately? Like, do you go to the Haha a lot? Like, where are you going?
Yeah. I mean, I'll get up at the Haha. I get up at the Improv probably the most. I get up there.
Yeah.
And then, honestly, man, I got back into mics again.
Yeah.
Because I realized that like the first 4 years, I pretty much just did mics. Mm-hmm. And then there was like a point, maybe it was when I started opening for Jeff, where I stopped doing mics, you know?
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, I'm doing shows, so I don't need to. I almost like, and it wasn't even like I'm too good to do a mic or I'm better than a mic. I just was like, well, now that I'm getting booked on shows, I don't need mics. And now that I've been headlining for a couple of years, the first year I was like using all this material I built up over whatever, 6 years, right? And then I did all these cities and now I'm like, oh, I'm going back to these cities and I can't do the same hour.
Yeah.
And I got to rebuild the act, but I'm not going to rebuild the act doing spots.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be able to just like work through. I'm not at that level. So I started going back and doing open mics and like, I'll just go hard. Like I had like a 3-day run a couple weeks ago where I did like 14 mics.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I schedule them out. Now Fourth Wall has like a daytime mic.
I know.
Right? Which is really good. So I'll go, what I'll do when I'm like really going hard and I'm like, I need to crank out some time, I'll do a 2 o'clock and a 3 o'clock. Then I'll take a break. I'll look at what I did, rewrite. And then I'll do a 5 and a 6 in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
And then go back, or 6 and a 7, and then go back to the Hollywood one and do like an 8 and a 9.
Wow.
So I can knock out like 6 mics in a day.
That's the cool thing about this.
Which is like half an hour. And like, if you're like, okay, today I'm just going to work on this 5.
Yeah.
That 5 can go a long way if you really put in the work.
You can literally work the 5 minutes.
You work the 5 minutes 6 times.
You could do it 6 different ways.
6 different ways. And then you have like a gap in there where you
could, different audiences.
That's, and also I go, what I don't do is I try not to stay in one room for too long.
Yeah.
So I'll do like 2 in Hollywood. Then I'll go to North Hollywood and do 2 there. And then go back and do the 2 there.
Right.
And then it feels like, it feels fresher.
I've never been opposed to open mics. I've never thought like, well, I shouldn't be doing them anymore. You know what I mean?
I was just lazy, I think. I think I just got lazy. I got complacent with the act that I had, or with the material that I had.
Yeah.
And then it was like, well, this material gives me enough of a cushion where I can work new stuff. But when you're what I pretty much did, I don't know, like 7 or 8 months ago, I said, any joke I haven't written in the last 3 months,
mm-hmm.
I'm not doing.
You're just going to dump it?
I just dumped it.
Are you going to record it before you dump it?
Yes, it's there. Mm. I'm just not going to, because like, for example, I'm going to DC tomorrow. So I'm doing the DC Improv. I was there a year ago. I have like this anxiety that like the same people are going to show up.
Uh-huh.
And some of the same people are going to show up. I'm sure there'll be new people too who have never heard my act. But to me, I'm like, those people that showed up again, I don't want to give them the same act.
And yeah,
I'm not going to build a new...
A year later, they're going to be a little disappointed.
They're going to be a little disappointed. I think there's like a... The reality is, I think if you're doing... Let's say you're doing 50. If you have like 35 new and 15 from the year before...
I think it's okay.
They're probably fine.
Yeah.
They're probably... Because here's an interesting thing. After a show, and it depends, obviously, but like... most people, when they finish a comedy show, how many jokes can they actually remember after just like first listen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you go in back and you're like, all right, he just did an hour, name 5 jokes and what they were about. Yeah,
5 would be tough.
Be tough.
Yeah.
Like people just don't have that. And I think we forget that. But I still think as comics, you have to maintain mm-hmm. that respect to the people that are spending money to come to your show.
Well, I always try to write for being remembered. So I think I would have a really hard time with that, because I always try to go for my jokes or like, I want you to remember this. Like, I want you to, like, the next time you experience it in life,
yeah.
to think about me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for the rest of your life, you and your wife are going to look at each other and go, like, remember that comic? That's what I want.
That's a good philosophy.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so I'm trying to do, like, more and more stories and, like, really unique stories, but where everyone's kind of experienced it, but it's my unique spin on it.
Right.
And I've always kind of gotten that. And I learned that from a few comics that told me, like, just fucking be remembered. That's the biggest thing. Because, yeah, be funny, but, like, there's so many funny guys.
There's so many funny... Well, you have to have a point of view and ultimately, you're just telling the story of yourself and the way that you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, what... I had a show in San Diego, I don't know how many months, like, 5 months ago. And you ever, like, have a show and you're just like, I don't want to do any of my jokes.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't like my jokes.
Absolutely.
I don't like any of these. And I have this thing. I feel like I look at my, like, the different, the comic I was when I started, then the comic I was 4 years in, and then, like, 6 years in, 7 years in, 8 years in, whatever. And it's all been I don't know if any of them have been me.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know? Like, they've all, I think... I've gotten closer over time, but they've all been it's been a version of me, or a version of the comic I think I should be. In the beginning, it was like, I need to talk about fuck chicks, you know? Yeah. And it's like, no, you don't, buddy.
Right.
No, you don't. And then people can sense that.
You're also finding who you are on stage.
Like, I was also 18.
You're 18 years old.
So like,
old.
I had no idea who I was.
Yeah.
But then I think I became, then there was like a period where I was like, I'm going to be a very clean comic and I'm going to be a very like positive comic. You know what I mean? Like this is, so then I started writing to that. Mm-hmm. And then what I started finding was I started having trouble writing to that, and I think it was because it was almost as if I was writing for another comic.
Yeah.
I wasn't writing for me. I was writing for this persona,
mm-hmm.
right?
You're also super heavily influenced by, like, your surroundings, especially when you're young, like, and you're a young comic, and you look up to all these guys, and you see them crushing, and you try to be like them. But it's like, you can crush like them, but do it like you. You know what I mean? Like, but you learn that later.
But the moments that I love the most on stage, and that I'm like, that show in San Diego, the point being, I think if you were just watching that show, you'd probably be like, oh, that wasn't a very good set.
Hmm.
It was the best set that I've had in the last, that I can remember.
I know what you mean.
Because I started going off, because I was like, I don't want to do my set. So then I just started riffing about shit. And because I was riffing, I wasn't in this comedy box that I put myself in with my jokes. And I had no choice but to just be myself.
Yeah.
And this, my, like, I know it sounds cheesy or whatever, but my, like, true essence came out in that mm-hmm. moment. And what I realized was there's so many things that I'm scared to talk about, that I've avoided talking about from a place of fear.
Dude, me too, man.
You know?
Yeah.
And in the last, or, and, like, fear about what that means about myself, I think also I'm an inherently sensitive person, so I think I'm like, I think there was a small period there where I was like afraid of writing things that would super offend people,
yeah.
you know? And that's not a way to fucking write comedy and to mm-hmm. write good comedy. Because here's my thing. Ultimately, it's like, write what you want to write about.
Yeah.
You know, and like you, the only person that can, here's the thing. I have things that I won't write jokes about and ways that I won't write jokes because I just don't find them funny and I don't see the point. And even if people do laugh at them, is that where I want people to laugh from or whatever? You know what I mean? That's just,
you got to do you.
You got to do you. All that matters is, can you stand by your joke? And can you say, look, if you were offended, because everyone's going to, some jokes are going to get way more people offended than mm-hmm. others, but you're always going to find someone that's going to find something somewhere.
Yeah, so
it's inevitable, right? Yeah. So all you can really do is set up your moral compass and be like, all right, this is what I have these filters that like are just mm-hmm. for me that I can stand by. Then the rest is out of my control.
Yeah.
And once you do that, it's so freeing because you're no longer operating from a place of fear about people, of how people are going to receive the joke. You're operating from a place of empowerment because you know that like I can live with, I can stand by this joke
yeah.
and I can defend this joke.
It's funny that you mentioned that because I recently was just thinking about it that because I'm doing jokes right now and I really like them. I really like the way that they're going and I'm doing them right now that I would have never done
mm-hmm.
like I don't know how many years ago and I would have never had the balls to talk about it. And the other day I like stopped and went like, when did that change? Like I didn't even realize when it changed. Like nothing went, you know what, fuck it, talk about it. Nothing like that happened. It was just all of a sudden I was just talking about something and I was completely comfortable with it. And then I just thought, like, when did that happen?
Right.
You know?
I mean, yeah. And it's all...
And look at Bill Maher, dude. Like, that's the political comic, right? He does, like, a lot of political stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of his at all. But you gotta, like, kind of respect what he did with his career because there's not a huge audience for what he does. And I can imagine him, like, imagine, like, when no one knows who he was, like, when he was an up-and-comer, like, going, you know, following Crushers and then going, and then just talking about, like, politics and his views on, like, you know, conservatives. And you know what I mean? Like, first of all, people aren't going to agree with his views. Mm-hmm. And secondly, like, that's not a thing that people really want to hear about. Like, they'll talk about the news and use big words that politically people don't know what the fuck it means. Mm-hmm. But like he stuck to his guns and it must have been really hard. Probably a lot of clubs stopped booking him because like he didn't do well, or I would imagine. I'm just imagining. I don't know for a fact.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I know I struggled. You know, we struggle with certain topics or just being a rookie. You struggle.
You struggle. I mean, it all comes back to what, finding your voice, right?
And that's what it is, and finding your voice.
That's all it is. And like, I know...
But when you find your voice and you find what you want to do, it's sticking to your guns. And then it becomes a game of, let me weed out who doesn't like me. Because eventually everyone's going to start to realize they don't like you. Right. And then you're realizing people that stayed is your audience.
It's impossible to appeal to everyone and to be mm-hmm. 1,000% universal.
Just find like your niche. Like find your people.
Like, dude, who's the most universal? Who's the most, let's just say Kevin Hart. And there are people that don't like Kevin Hart's comedy.
Yeah.
So even someone who's as universal as him, there are plenty of people that don't like him. Right?
Yeah.
So
I wouldn't use him as an example of being universal. I would just use him as an example of being most well known. Like, that's why everybody thinks they like him.
But his audience is... I'm not saying his necessarily... Well, I don't know.
Oh, you mean like his audience range? It's probably like little kids to older people. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm saying he has... Numbers-wise, his audience is enormous.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? He appeals to many different groups, right? And there are comics that do that. And even yet, the point being, the operating from a place of I want everyone to like me and I want everyone to think I'm funny is only going to cripple you because it's impossible.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean, and like I said, all I have control over is like the things that I say and the jokes that I make. And it's about like me being asking myself, like, why am I telling these jokes and what am I saying with these jokes and being able to be able to sleep at night with like the jokes that I tell for me.
Yeah.
You know, and if I can, then I'll do them because I think it was like, all right, I'm going to avoid the line, right? There's like that line. You could ride the line and push the line, but if you're doing it from a place, for me at least, that feels like it's a place from empathy or a place that doesn't feel hateful or a place that like is that you actually understand what you're saying and that I can stand by it, then great. You know what I mean? And I think ultimately then people can't deny the funny there.
Yeah.
They just can't. So I don't know. It's also complicated too because it's like I don't know.
I'm at a place where I'm just like I have to just be me. And you're gonna like me or you not. I just have to be me, and it's a long journey because it's a short journey to realize what people like, what the majority of people like, and be that. It's a shorter journey, but I can't do that. I have to just do me, and it's a longer journey for people to find you. Like people that are into you are gonna find you. You know, yeah. I don't think I'm not like. You can't put me in a category. Like, you can't be like, well, he's a clean comic. You can't put me like, well, he's a dirty comic. Like, you can't, because, like, I'm...
But you're just a comic.
I'm just a comic. Like, why do I have to put any label on me? Like, I'm going to tell you this joke the best way I think it should be told.
And
if that comes out dirty...
Then it comes out dirty.
I'm a people's comic. Like, I'm a human being's comic. Like, if we're all human beings. I'm going to tell you something that you might have gone through, and sometimes it might be sexual. Does that make me a dirty comic? I mean, you can call me that if you want, but I don't think so.
Yeah.
It's like, why put that label on me?
But also, there are comics that are clean comics and comics that are bluer comics. Mm. And there are people in both of their audiences that may not... Like, there are Jim Gaffigan fans that maybe don't like dirty comedy or dirty comics, right? But there are Jim Gaffigan fans that also love blue comics, right? So there's that, like, concentric circle. The point is that stop... It's not about writing to what you think people will like and what you think people will laugh at. It's about writing to what you think is funny and writing to what is true to you.
Yeah.
And then it just happens.
I think when you stop giving a fuck on stage, you know how they always tell you that as soon as you stop giving a fuck, you actually get better. As soon as that happens, that's when that happens too. It's because you'll start to give them the real you because you don't give a shit. You don't think about like, oh, are they going to like me? You know what I mean? Like, sure. Like sometimes if you're management and you ask me to clean it up or not do certain things, I'll do that. Sure. Yeah, like, you know, yeah, sure, man. This is your audience. Like you hired me to do the job. Fine. But I mean, if you're not going to give me restrictions, I'm going to do whatever I feel is necessary.
And I also think that like at the end of the day it comes down to for each comic. All I can control is what I do.
What
as a
you
comic.
Do, yeah.
That's it. That's all I can do. And like, I can't control how people are going. How the same way. Sometimes I'll write something. I'll be like, "This is fire."
Yeah.
And then people will be like, "Nah, it's not."
Huh.
And then I'll stumble onto something. I'll be like, "I think this is all right." And then it ends up. It just like it goes.
Yeah.
So it's you have to almost. You have to give up this feeling of, it's kind of going back to that feeling of control, right? You have to give up that feeling of trying to figure out the equation every single time.
Yeah.
Because the second you think you know and you get it, you don't.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a constant exploration of yourself, which I think is the coolest part of comedy because there's I find out truths about myself on stage more than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're on there, in those moments where you just like either, let's say you don't feel like telling those jokes or those jokes aren't working, whatever, you're still up there.
Yeah.
You got to figure it out. And it's like, all right, who am I? Am I the person that's going to work my way out of this? Am I the person that's just going to like feed into the death?
Yeah.
What is it? And what does that say about me? And then you reflect. And it's like, it's constant, like, do reflect. And
that's
work.
Why open mics are great, dude.
Yeah.
Like, going hard in open mics, bro. That just means, like, I don't give a fuck. I'm going to try this out. I don't care if it's not funny. I got to find out somehow. You know what I mean?
And I'm going to feel it. You mm-hmm. can also feel when something... I can feel when I'm doing something that is, like it's supposed... It, like, it's on paper funny.
Yeah.
And then that's, like, supposed to be funny. And then something that just is funny.
Yeah.
There's, you know, and sometimes those cross over, but, like...
I don't like trying out new stuff in people that came out to see me and support me and fucking have a great night and paid money. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't like trying. Don't get me wrong. Like, if something hits my brain in the spirit of the moment, right. I'll say it because it's probably going to, like, the stuff that hits you in the moment will probably work. And just fucking say it. And then there's other things that, like you said, like some things you can just tell it's just going to be funny. And like, it might be small. I could squeeze it in. You don't even hear that I added something new, but working a new bit out, it's like, dude, open mics. I haven't been to open mics in a long time. I'm not opposed to it. It's just that I do a lot of little shitty bar shows, and that's like an open mic.
Just like no mic.
You know what I mean? It's I can just go work out.
I also realized too, man, I'm a writer. Like, I write my jokes.
Mm-hmm.
For so long, I fought against that because of the allure of like, I write on stage.
Yeah.
I don't. I'm just not – what I'll do, I need to know where I start and where I end.
Mm-hmm.
And then I need to know where the funny bridge is between those.
Yeah.
And then I can play from that. I mm-hmm. can write between all that. But if I don't have that beginning, middle, and end
– I'm about structure, dude.
I'm going to fucking die on stage.
I'm a writer too, bro. I mean, I still write on stage, but I do it in like workout rooms. I still test the material and then
– But when you say write on stage, yeah. right? What does that mean? You write down one sentence premise and you riff on that premise?
If I have an idea for a premise, mm-hmm. yeah, I will go up and I'll riff on it.
Okay.
And also what writing on stage means to me is sometimes it won't work. So my body's natural instinct in fear of being on stage with something not working, my body will start shooting out things to save it in like a survival okay. mode. And then you'll actually stumble on some stuff. And then I can go like, well, that one worked, that one didn't, and I'll keep going. So, I'll go back to the notebook, though, of course.
Yeah.
But I do write. Do you know what's funny? I was doing a show the other night, and Jackson McQueen was on it, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess he was supposed to go up, like, way earlier, but he got there late, so they made him go after me. But the guy before me was, actually, I won't say his name, but the guy before me was doing well, but I don't think he was doing, like, I don't think he's funny. He was just really loud.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Frank Yee was there, and Frank Yee had to go after him, and he was like all nervous. You know, he's like, "Oh, bro." I'm like, "Bro, he's not killing. Like, he's just intimidated because he's loud. He's not really right. saying anything that brilliant. You know what I mean?"
Yeah.
But the guy was all over the place, like loud, no structure, just throwing shit out, and that kind of, and the room became really rowdy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then Jackson McQueen like showed up, and I was like, "Hey, do you want him to go?" Next, because you know Frank was only doing like five, so the room was still rowdy. But then they were like, I try to push for Jackson to go. Jackson's like, yeah, can I go before you? And I was like, yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
And then they were like, no, he came late. So blah blah blah. And I'm like, okay. And then I whispered to Jackson, and I was like, I actually wanted you to go first because you're super structured like I am.
Mm-hmm.
Like Jackson's jokes are written and structured. He has a set list,
right?
You know, and I'm like, I wanted you to go put them back in that mood
yeah.
for me, and you were going to struggle with
it. Yeah. What I'll do, it depends on the show, is I'll be like, okay, I'm going to open with this. I'm going to end with this. I'm going to have this stuff in the middle, and then I'm going to leave space to go off on this or this.
Yeah.
To either do some crowd work or explore an idea or whatnot and just like sandwich it. But at those shows, because when I'm headlining, people are spending money to see me for an hour.
Yeah.
If I'm doing a 10-minute set, I'm a small part of the show. I know I'm going to be I'm setting myself up to be funny for most of that 10 minutes, and the stuff that goes off that may be funny, maybe not, but I'm not going to kill the show. I would never do that. But when people pay money, it's like you came for a show and you came to see the product of my hard work and what that looks like in structured 1 hour.
Yeah.
Have you seen Goldman's special?
Who?
Gary Goldman?
No, I haven't seen his new special. So I like him.
He's so good.
I like him a lot.
I mean, you want to talk about structure and writing.
Yeah.
The guy is off the wall.
He's always been great, but he's just like so much better now.
Yeah. But he's a perfect example of somebody who, if you look at his past specials and a lot of his comedy, it is very observational, mm-hmm. right? Some of his best chunks are mostly observational. Obviously, some of them come from like personal experiences and stories, but it is that. And then you see this last special where he talks about his depression, and it's exactly kind of goes back to what I was talking about, where it's that idea of like all these things I'm scared to talk about, right? For what people will think, right? Or how people will see me.
Yeah.
You know? And how they will judge me.
Where can you get that? Where did his special go?
It was on HBO, but now they put it up on YouTube.
Oh, okay.
It was Mental Health Awareness Month or Day.
Okay.
So they put it
did
up
on. Did you see he was in Joker for like a second?
I haven't seen Joker.
You haven't seen Joker?
I haven't seen Joker yet.
You don't want to?
What? No, I do. I just
haven't had the time.
I just haven't had the time.
It's great, dude.
Yeah.
So you probably heard it's great.
Yeah, I've heard good things.
Goldman's in it for like a second.
Oh, is he?
Because you know,
I heard they had comics do their own material.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's all.
I mean, like, he's in it for like a second. You don't even really hear a bit.
What does he say? Like one word that's super funny? Does he just go apt?
I don't know.
Dude, the motherfucker has the ability. This dude has the ability to take unfunny words and just make them funny.
He's great.
With just pause and timing and cadence. It's brilliant.
I like him.
But it's a good special.
He's only in it just because, like, you know, the Joker is trying to be a comic,
right?
In the movie, and there's a scene where he's at a comedy club, and Gary Goldman's before him. So like you just don't. It's nothing really about Gary Goldman. Doesn't have any lines.
Okay.
It's just like he's the comic before him.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you should watch it, dude. It's
like the
great.
It's like the person who brings up comics on like Comedy Central, like
something like that. You know. yeah, dude. It's funny that you know, you and I both. We were talking about lots of things we started the haha and stuff, but both started like so young, you know, and that's why we've been through like, I was raised by this shit. Like I was raised in a comedy club pretty much. Like that's how young we started, you know? And
it's great. I'm like, I've been doing it for 9 years, but
I'm going on 11, dude,
but it feels like four. Like I always,
it feels like 11.
No, it feels like not, but like I think there's a because of our age,
yeah,
and maybe that changes. But like there's a part of me is like, oh, yeah, I've just been doing it for a few years,
yeah,
because it feels like I've only just started doing it.
Every couple of months, I feel like that, like it just started doing it
because
like
started doing
you hit
it.
Like new breakthroughs,
yeah,
of like, but yeah, dude, it's just like we were talking about how like, you know, we've been through emotional stuff. It's just, you know, working at a comedy club where like people made you cry and shit like that. It's just like, it's fucking rough. Okay. It's a rough industry to be in. And when you're a little kid, you know, just realizing, bro, what? You even younger than me, but when I'm 40, I will have been doing comedy as long as I haven't.
I'll be that at 39.
At 39.
Yeah.
So I'm only like 9 years away from that. And yeah. That's one thing that,
and I'll be that 37, whatever.
That keeps me excited about getting older, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. When I think about getting older, I look forward to that. I look forward to, like, when I'm 41, I can say I've been a comic longer than I haven't.
I'm a horrible comedian compared to what I'm going to be in 10 years. I am atrocious. And that's the exciting part, is that I know if you keep working and you keep being free to, like, the fucking process, you have the potential to be at the level of the comics that you love.
Yeah.
Most specials that I love, the comics are in their late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah. Dude, I saw Burr last night.
Oh, yeah?
He was at the store, and he was doing a new bit that, like, he just released a special, and this bit wasn't even on it.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a new bit that was just like, like, dude, how are you this good? How are you this fucking good? But he's like us in another 20 years.
I remember this was when I was starting off. I would go to the store, and I remember seeing Burr working on. It was just a premise at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Talked about it for 2 minutes, and then every time it would grow a little bit more, yeah, a little bit more, and then I went back to school, and then a special came out, and that joke was on the special,
and it's like it was monster. Like a
14-minute monster.
I
chunk.
Love that,
and I went, oh. The process is the same.
Yeah.
He's just better and faster at it.
Yeah.
You know, than what I am.
Dude, yeah.
But the process thing, and that to me was like the very exciting part. It's like, oh, it doesn't, he's not doing, the process isn't different for him than it is for me. He's just better at it.
Mm-hmm.
But then all of a sudden, it feels possible.
Yeah.
Because when
you'll get better at it.
Yeah. Because when you see the 14-minute finish chunk, you're like, how the fuck?
Uh-huh.
It's like you see a big fucking skyscraper. You're like, how the fuck could you build the skyscraper? And then right. It's like, because you put a fucking rod down and then another one. I don't know anything about construction.
But if you watch someone do it, it becomes more possible.
Exactly. If you see the steps.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we're very lucky to have like these pioneer. I mean, every generation probably had a pioneer. Like, you know, there's some comics that are like, dude, Pryor, you know, laid the foundation and we learned how to do it. But our generation is the most educated because we have YouTube and podcasts where we actually can almost like be in the brains.
How much comedy do you watch?
I mean, a lot.
A lot.
Yeah. Always.
Yeah.
Dude, and you got to respect Burr, obviously, because he's one of the best. But also, it's like, dude. In a world that we live in right now, he's not really PC. We live in a world where they want like everything but a white straight male. He's a fucking white straight male. Never, you don't hear him going like, "Well, they don't cast me because I'm fucking white and I'm straight," and that's not what Hollywood wants right now.
Yeah. Also, by the way,
he's undeniable funny. Like, yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, bro. But also, they are. You know what I mean? Like, I love.
No, they absolutely do that. But that's what I'm saying. You have to respect. That's how fucking good he is. Like, that doesn't bother him because you can't deny his level.
They absolutely don't do what
I'm saying. They absolutely do cast for like, we'd rather have a gay person or we'd rather have a
dude. White dudes have plenty of opportunities.
No, I'm not saying that they don't. I'm just saying that like it this world right now, that's what's being casted, you know. And I respect guys that didn't go with the path of like, I need to be casted. They just did things on their own. Like, I'm fucking funny in my audience, dude. When I go to the store, like last night I was at the store, uh-huh, and Burr was on stage. The main room was sold out, and the people, they're comics that just line up in hallways down to the bathroom just trying to peek and listen to him. Like, he is just like who you go to see.
Mm-hmm.
He's the comics comic, you know. It's just so undeniably good.
And there's so many monsters.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a golden age of comedy in that mm-hmm. sense, because there's so many people that are operating at such a high level too.
And we're in the most competitive fucking city, dude.
Yeah. But that goes back to what you said though, is that there's plenty of funny comics.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fucking funny. Now, there's a lot of funny comics.
There's nothing special about you if you're a funny comic.
You have to have, like you said, you have to be memorable
mm-hmm.
and you have to be, I think you just have to like, it's about telling a story of yourself and the way you see the world in a way that people are like, oh, fucking that guy that saw the world that way, mm-hmm. or presented something that I've seen before, but in a way that I never thought of before.
Yeah.
You know,
just and be it's honest. Triggering. Like, yeah. Just be honest about the shit that's going on in your brain. And like, no one said I'm right. It's just, this is what's going on in my brain. And I'm telling you guys in a funny way.
Yeah.
And like you said, there's always going to be someone who gets offended. So just don't fucking focus on that. This isn't about you being offended. This is about me telling you what I think. And you can not agree with it, but we're all still going to like sit here. And one thing I like about Bill Burr is that he finds a way to tell the truth in a way that doesn't really offend anybody. Like, he gets away with a lot of shit. You know, he's really smart about wording things right.
But I think he thinks, like I said, ultimately, I think it's about really looking at what you're trying to look at what you're saying. Right. I feel like saying things flippantly, right, and just for the sake of saying shit is, I guess what I'm saying is, I think that there should be purpose behind, and that's where the work comes in, right? It's like you put in the work into the craft, to craft something
that you understand,
dude. And you've thought about. And like I said, that ultimately you can defend and you can stand by and you can live with, because I also think that that's how you get the shit that fucking sticks and the shit that's that really connects with audiences on a super high level.
Yeah,
I think there's stuff
being remembered.
Yeah, because I don't think getting laughs is enough.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not. I think there's like there's plenty of shit. This is my thing, man.
It's moving someone.
Yes.
Make them move them. You know.
Yes. Getting laughs. Just I guess my thing is that like saying we only have so much time on that stage.
Yeah.
Right. What are you trying to do in that time?
I would like to touch. Move every emotion. Laughter is one of them,
right? But you How want emotions. You want people have? To. You but then you want to take them maybe to a place of melancholy, a nostalgic place, mm-hmm. right? And then fucking hit them with a laugh. Then all of a sudden they're fucking feeling this weird like thing of like, oh, I'm like 13 again, and I'm laughing the way I was when I was 13, but I'm 54. Yeah. It's like you're taking them to a place. So I guess my thing is like, I think that there's so much, only so much time you have on that stage. What are you doing with that time? And I don't think that what I'm pretty much saying is that like just because people laugh at something doesn't mean I feel like that's one, that's like the bare minimum.
Yeah,
the bare minimum for a joke is that people laugh at it. But like
that's the minimum requirement to be a comic.
Yeah,
is to get laughs. Like that's what makes you a comic. That's the minimum thing you need to achieve is getting laughs.
Yeah,
everything. There's so much more.
There's so much more. And I actually,
I 100% agree with you
and
on
I,
that.
I, for me, my favorite comics and my favorite comedy is it's honest. It's funny, but it's also honest mm-hmm. and it's empathetic and it's human, right? Yeah. And that human is linked to that honesty.
Yeah.
And that empathy is linked to that humanity, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and it's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even if I say something that makes you feel embarrassed, like if you don't like dirty stuff and you go like, oh, I didn't like it because I felt, you feel a little embarrassed. You don't like hearing dirty things.
Yeah.
Guess what? Embarrassment is an emotion that exists. And I'm trying to hit every single emotion that you have.
Yeah.
You felt something. And how can you put a price tag on that? I love when people leave a movie and they're like, movies are so expensive nowadays. They're $20. It was like, if you felt something, how do you put a price tag on a feeling?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But anyway, we can talk about this for fucking hours. Well, I love talking thing, comedy. That's one thing I fucking love about you, dude. It's like we both were really passionate about stand-up and like, talk about it forever.
Yeah, and I try not to but back to the movie shit, bro. I don't watch every movie the same way.
Mm.
You know? I mean, yeah. If we're just talking about movies, is that like I don't go to see... I love rom-coms because I just fucking love rom-coms. But like I'm not watching a rom-com the way that I am some fucking thing that's probably going to get nominated for an Oscar and putting them... I'm not looking... Because it's like, if that's how I did it, I would think most movies are horrible movies. But, like, they're not. Like,
yeah.
Like they're... Like,
you gotta take it for what it is, yeah.
You take it for what it is.
Tell me about your movie, bro. What's it about? So you filmed a movie.
I filmed a movie.
You and your fiancé?
Girlfriend.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Sorry, didn't mean to jump the gun
there.
No,
you're good.
So you and your girlfriend... Our co-stars in it. Did you guys write it together?
And Michael Blaustein? He's also a comic.
He's in it too, that's right.
Yeah, so the three of us wrote it.
Okay, cool.
And then Michael and I directed it, and then we produced it, and then we all acted in it, and then I edited it, and we shot it in Michigan 2 years ago.
Wow.
And now it's coming out.
Why in Michigan?
That's where my girlfriend is from.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you have a lot of access to more stuff out there, like, you know, production and location?
We had way more access. We shot in our hometown, which is like this small little town in Michigan.
That's perfect.
Yeah, so it was great. So we just had access to, I mean, we shot in a grocery store, in a bowling alley, at a hardware store.
That's great.
And people were just like, we shot in her mom's house, and then the cabin next door was like, you can use our place. So we shot there for 4 nights.
I watched the trailer, and you've shown me, I think, clips of the trailer before it was ever released.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like a fucking high quality movie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you had a budget, you put a lot of effort into it.
Not a lot.
But that's great.
We
though,
stretched
dude.
It. I mean, like, yeah, that was the thing, is that we just had
hey, it's fucking doing something. It's everybody like, oh, we're gonna fucking make a movie. It's like, just you did it, dude.
Yeah.
And tell us what it's about. Like, what's the plot of the movie?
So I play a journalist that goes into a small mining town to cover a story, and I meet a local who I find out that 10 years prior, her parents and friends were killed in a shooting. And she has a very like peculiar way in which she deals with that trauma. So I see the opportunity for the story that'll jumpstart my career. So I essentially am exploiting her for my own personal gain.
Okay.
Is the gist of it.
Okay.
So, yeah. I mean, you know, it's...
And who's Blaustein play?
Blaustein plays her brother.
Oh.
Who's like a veteran.
Okay.
And, yeah, I mean, it's a drama. But yeah. There's comedy in there. Like, okay.
Would you say romance drama or not really?
You know, it's so funny. I think drama romance. It's definitely. I think there's definitely like a romance there,
mm-hmm.
but it's not in the traditional sense.
Yeah,
I don't want to like get too far into it.
Sure,
but you know, there's.
It looks, dude. I'm excited. Yeah, I'm excited to see.
It really touches on like. I mean, really, it's a film about grief and how people cope with grief and what happens. And how that grief sticks,
yeah.
You know, like tragedy strikes and it doesn't just go away a couple years later. Like people left in the wake of tragedy continue to grieve and continue to love the people that they lost.
What gave you guys this idea to write about specifically that?
So, my girlfriend, when she was in high school, there was a shooting and, one of her friends, was killed.
Mm-hmm.
So it really came from her experience, sort of her innocence was taken away and the town's innocence was taken away when this happened. And, it was really just her experience in dealing with that grief and dealing with that tragedy. And, you know, especially in small towns like that, there's not a lot of mental health resources. So really it became, okay, so this was an experience that she brought to us and she shared with us. And from there, we really created like a whole fictional story that's rooted in, you know, how people cope with a tragedy like that and are left in the wake of you know, the tragedy and that senseless violence.
I think it's a great time to get a message like that out.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see it. And I think that you're going to get, a lot of positive feedback that's going to leave you feeling with a great feeling of accomplishment. And so I'm excited, dude.
Thanks, man.
I'm super excited.
It's been great. And the cool thing is we're taking it back there. We're doing like a week in Milwaukee where we have like 11 screenings. And then
that's great.
We're playing in like 6 cities in Michigan. So we're just driving city to city and doing Q&As.
That's great, dude.
And
where is it going to get released? iTunes?
iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play.
Okay.
So right now it's available for pre-order on iTunes. And then on November 12th it comes out and it's available to rent and buy on iTunes, Amazon, and
Google What's it Play. Called?
It's called Up There.
Up there.
Up there. Because they call the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, they call it the UP.
Okay.
And it's north, so we called it Up There. Funny story, when we first titled it, we put a period between the U and the P as like a, you know, the
UP upper there.
Well, you got it right away. We were that title for 4 months, and then fucking Michael texted his uncle, and he's like, is it about a urologist? And we're like, oh, no, we should probably change the title.
Up there is way better.
Well, it was supposed to be up there.
Yeah.
But we just put the periods in as like a...
It's great.
We were like, oh, it's cute. And okay. Then people were like, we were at a festival, our first festival, and people were like, oh, did you guys make a UP there? And
uh-huh.
We're like, it's up there. And then we kept saying UP there. And then I was like, guys, it sounds like they're saying like UP over there. Like, this is not...
What's the actual release date?
November 12th.
Wow, it's coming up. And so right now you can pre-order on iTunes and you sent me the link, so I'm going to have the link in the description of this episode, you guys, so you guys can pre-order. You know how much it is to pre-order?
$12.99.
Yeah, check out the movie, you guys.
And I always say like
you're supporting a comic and you're supporting someone that actually fucking did something.
And like
and it looks great, dude.
Thanks, man. And we're like literally we made it with like a crew of 3 guys. And us just running around, and we're like, and I edited in my apartment. We're doing this thing like grassroots fucking mom and pop shop.
How long is it?
It's 1 hour and 34 minutes.
Perfect.
And like we're up on fucking iTunes with like these big studio films, and like we cracked today the top 200 of just dramas.
Cool.
So it was like us and then Furious 7. I guess Furious 7 is a drama now. So, you know, I mean, it moves. But, like, you know, it's like we're going up against the fucking big guys out of our one-bedroom apartment.
That's great, and, dude. That's how you fucking fight from underneath.
Yeah, you know? Fight the big guy.
And are you going to take it to, like, any festivals or anything?
We already did. We did a few festivals. We have one more in Minnesota next week. And then that's the last festival. And then it's out.
Well, I wish you great success with it, bro.
Thanks, man.
Up there, you guys. Click the link in the description and pre-order that shit, okay?
Yeah.
I'm excited for it. we're going to get out of here. You got any dates coming up?
I'm in DC. When this is going to come out next week, probably, right?
No, this comes out tonight.
Tonight?
Or tomorrow.
Oh, okay. Then I'm in DC this weekend on Friday and Saturday at the DC Improv.
That's the 18th and the 19th.
The 18th and the 19th, the DC Improv. And then I'm...
Two shows?
Two shows each night, so four shows total. And then I think two are sold. I don't know. One sold out. Friday early show. But anyway, so tickets for that are DanielWeingard.com or DC Improv. And then I'm just setting up my tour dates for 2020, so I don't know yet.
But okay, it's all great.
Booked.
Awesome, dude. Yeah. I'll be at the Comedy Store this weekend, Friday, you guys, the 18th. It's the early show, 7:30. You can get tickets at homeschoolpod.com. Click on tour. And I got a bunch of other dates up there, too, but we'll just leave you that one for now because it's the soonest. That's pretty much it, dude. It's great to see you, man.
Good to see you,
dude. You're one of my oldest friends in stand-up, and I love talking comedy with you, and I value your opinions on it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a cool, special thing that we're like two dudes that started super young. Even though I started a little before you, we're still like just we've experienced the same a lot. And
you look way better.
Thanks,
than when we started. So you
this podcast
you've de-aged over time. You're like the fucking Irishman. You've just gone backwards.
Thanks, man. I try to keep it off. That's the thing.
No, you look good. What are you doing,
bro? Dude, I don't eat meat anymore.
Oh, really?
I'm full. What is it? Just fish only.
Pescatarian.
Pescatarian. Pescatarian.
Okay.
And I mean, I walk a lot. I probably should work out more. It'd probably even help even more. But do a lot of walking, a lot of hiking, and just fucking, you know, try to avoid sugar and carbs. I take giant breaks from like sugar and stuff like that.
And the meat helped you feel better?
Oh, dude.
Really? Yeah. Made a difference?
So great.
I can't do it.
I said that too.
I mean, I could.
I didn't do it overnight.
I don't want to.
Yeah.
And
see,
I like meat.
Me too, dude. I never wanted to. Like, it wasn't just like I woke up one day and I said, I'm not going to do it. And then I successfully, no.
Here's
my like,
thing.
It was like, don't do it, and then I was like, ah, fuck that. It was like back and forth
for
a lot.
Sure. It's like when people like, I drink Diet Coke, not a ton, but I drink Diet Coke, and people be like, that's bad for you. And I go, yeah, dude, but like, I don't do drugs anymore, and I don't drink like an asshole
that anymore. Shit will catch up to you later,
and I
though.
I don't smoke cigarettes.
I don't know the last time I had a soda, dude.
I mean, I probably have a Diet Coke once a week. That's not bad. Listen, there are so many things I could be doing instead of fucking having one Diet Coke a week.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, in the end...
Weed's a little better than...
What?
Weed's better than Diet Coke.
Weed's better than Diet Coke. Yeah, weed is better than Diet Coke.
Yeah, especially that's just pure chemical.
Do you smoke it or vape it or do you eat it?
I was doing all of it.
You was doing all of it?
Yeah. I'll still do an edible from time to time.
And now the edibles are, like, dosed where you can actually control it more. Yeah. So, there was... Dude, I remember... When I was like fucking 17, I went to some place right here off of Sepulveda, and I went to a shop there and I bought a brownie, but it was just like in a wrapper and it didn't have like a dosage. And I was living with my parents and they had like their friends over for dinner, and I ate it, and then I was feeling full, so I decided to go down to the elliptical machine that my mom had gotten. And I'm on the elliptical machine, I'm just like, and I at this point I knew nothing, but I guess when you work out, you get higher faster.
Yeah.
And it ended with me being in the shower afterwards and be like, oh my, fuck. And then I just remember putting on a John Mayer song, and I'm just dancing in my room to a John Mayer song by myself, whacked out of my mind. And my dad opens the door, and I just made eye contact with him, and he was just like, all right, good night. Close the door.
Yeah, I don't really do edibles that much.
It used to be crazy.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, it still is crazy, but you at least know what you're eating.
I used to get really nauseous when I did edibles. But yeah. I had one the other night for like the first time in a couple months. It was like a little like lemon mint. It was like 10 milligrams. And I just took it. My cousin gave it to me, and I just took it. I slept so great.
Yeah.
But anyway,
CBD.
Dude.
CBD is fucking great, too.
Let's get the fuck out of here, you guys. Right. Don't forget about the DC Improv. Instagram is...
DW Comedy,
Daniel Weingarten. I'm Augustino Zoido. I'm at Augustino Zoido on everything. I'm at the Comedy Store. Don't forget this weekend. And don't forget to get your Homeschool Podcast t-shirts or stickers or mugs. It's all at homeschoolpod.com. Click on merch. And next time you're doing your shopping on Amazon, go to homeschoolpod.com first. Click on the Amazon banner, which is on the homepage, and it's on the sponsors page, and just do all your shopping. And you're supporting the Homeschool Podcast. It's as simple as that. All right, you guys. And, dude, I fucking hope that when we are Bill Burr's age, that you and I are both still fucking in this.
Yeah.
And I hope I fucking see you all the time. And we're both just, you know, just fucking killers, dude.
Yeah.
Right?
Hell yeah, dude.
All right, you guys. I'll see you next time. Have a great weekend,
Thanks
everybody.
Thanks for having me, dude. That was fun.
Thank you for being on. See you next time.
Whew. That was fun. Because they can still hear you. To make a change for once in my life. It's gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. As I turn up the collar on my favorite winter coat, this wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street with not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them eat? A summer's disregard, a broken bottle top, and one man's soul. Yeah.
school.